389 days ago, Virginia suffered arguably the worst loss in the history of college basketball when they dropped a game to a 16 seed. Last night, they completed one of the most remarkable turnarounds in the history of sports.
Virginia, 6 seconds to go. Mooney up the floor, three on the left wing. That is no good. Rebound pulled down by DeAndre Hunter, and they're going to dribble it out from ruin to redemption. The Virginia Cavaliers are the 2019 NCAA National Champions. 85-77, Virginia wins its first men's basketball championship.
Kevin Kugler had the call on the NCAA Westwood One radio network. First NCAA title ever for the Cavaliers, who had to rally. DeAndre Hunter had a huge late three with 12 seconds to go in regulation to tie this game. How would you guys be feeling this morning if you were waking up in Lubbock?
I'm going to be honest with you. Angry. I'd be angry because as much as I don't like to blame officials, I would feel like I was robbed. I'd feel like I was robbed by the ball getting poked out of my player's hands and me losing possession of that. I'm okay with it because that's like as a bystander, I'm okay with it because that's the way the rule book is right now. And it was the correct call by the letter of the law, but I'd be angry because I'd feel like, okay, like 3, 4, 5 years ago before the technology got as good as it is now, I'd be sitting here a national champion today. I'd be trying not to blame God.
So Seth would be angry at the officials. Paul, yeah. How would you feel?
I'd be more angry that I got this far only to fall short, and that I would realize at the same time I'm probably, as a team, never going to get back to that point.
That's what I worry about.
I just said I wouldn't be angry at the officials.
I'd
be angry at the universe.
The universe.
I understand that was the correct call, but it still doesn't feel just. I'd be angry in general. Sometimes you just want to lash out.
Fair enough.
A hormonal teenager.
I was talking with my friend, a tech fan, last night, and she sent me this text. I don't know if I want to play for national championships. This was in the middle of the game. It's stressful as bleep. I may actually feel bad for Bama fans, and now I understand why they never have fun at games. It's because they are stressed as bleep, because all they can focus on is a championship, and it's winning or bust. Just saying, maybe the grass isn't greener. And she said a little bit further, I don't know if I'm for championship games. It's not our Texas Tech vibe. Don't get me wrong, we want to win in sports, but when we don't, we still have a great time either way. This just felt high stress the whole time. Oh. We're never like this. No matter how important the game, we're usually just having fun.
I've got a hot participation ribbon take about this, or I feel like I should. This is what participation trophies yield. a desire to not compete for championships.
Well,
I'm joking.
In her defense,
of course it's stressful.
It is a unique experience for them. I mean, the only other time that they've played in big stakes moment, this school goes back to the team that ultimately beat Texas with Michael Crabtree. Yeah. That was what, like 10, 11 years ago? And even then, before that, when was the last good Texas Tech team in any sport?
You know what I'd tell your friend? This is what I would tell her. This would be my, like I'm her uncle or something, like, or her grandfather. This would be my grandfatherly advice to her. Every great thing that's ever happened to me in my life, almost, I'm going through my head right, like almost every great thing that's ever happened in my life has been preceded by great nervousness, discomfort, unpleasantness.
It's a good life lesson.
And without all those things, the great things never would have happened. And it's not even always in terms of, like, it's not necessarily always sacrifice, it's not hard work, it's not, but there is something. There's a moment of unpleasantness before the greatness arrives. So, in life, she needs to learn to embrace that unpleasantness, embrace that tension. That precedes greatness.
If I was waking up in Lubbock this morning, I would be feeling like I definitely got the short end of the stick from the officiating last night. Kyle Guy, when he was tripped by his own guy, when I'm up by three with a couple minutes to go in overtime, that playoff Moretti with 69 seconds to go. But I'd also be feeling nice. What Paul's thinking, which is, all right, I got a big time coach in Chris Beard and my program's in good shape, but like these championship opportunities do not
so
come
hard.
Around all that often.
So, right. So hard. And I mean, this team seems to be the perfect blend of offense because they have some offensive players, but
yep.
They also play really good defense. Like that was the thing that struck me most about this game. The defense was great. I thought on both ends of the court.
Agreed.
Virginia and Texas Tech in this one. It's so hard to get
there. It's hard
though.
To get there if you're Duke.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
It's, but, oh boy, I feel for him.
Next headline, Astros came back to beat the Yankees 4-3 at Minute Maid Park last night. The eventual game-winning hit was a broken bat infield single by Carlos Correa.
Walking to the plate, that was the approach all the way around. Look for a sinker inside on the hands and try to hit a soft ground ball to first base. And, you know, it worked out according to the plan.
So he's obviously kidding, but Correa did drive in the eventual game-winning run. Osuna got the save, and beyond any numbers, it's fun watching Correa play right now because he looks like somebody who is clearly feeling very healthy. He is playing like Carlos Correa should be playing.
448 feet, which of course was ignored because Judge hit a home run. And anytime you're going to get pun about a Judge, you got to put that highlight up there. That's the only annoying thing. This is the one time I'll turn into the national media doesn't give us enough attention. It does bother me a little bit when Altuve hits a home run off of Tanaka, and all over my timeline, I've got ESPN, more videos of Aaron Judge, than Altuve.
Am I a bad person for wishing that we actually could get John Sterling on the call for these games instead of maybe other broadcasts? Because I really enjoy his cheesy home run calls. If they could make Sterling do cheesy home run calls for the Astros, wouldn't you enjoy it as like a change of pace for a week?
I wouldn't mind it for a week, yeah. I think Sterling's hilarious. I actually would like to get some of his calls from last night, but I just don't know if we have the access to that right now.
I think you are wrong for that.
I'm wrong?
Yeah.
Copeland Payne! What's in a name?
I'm sorry. Shticky home run calls.
They're fantastic.
If you guys have not heard John Sterling on the Yankees radio
he's
network.
He's the one that does the Giancarlo Stanton ones that are so interesting, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Once he said Giancarlo,
no si mi puedo parlo, yeah. Something along those lines.
It's está la biblioteca? Yes.
Astros go for the series win tonight. Another ESPN game with Garrett Cole on the mound. Next headline.
With all the injuries, with all the ups and downs that we've been through throughout this year, we still managed to get to the opportunity to get to a number 2 seed, you know, which is in the West, which is probably one of the hardest things to do. So you take it for what it is, take the patience and continue to work, stay focused on the long-term goal.
That's obviously James Harden. The Rockets will try and close out the regular season by winning their 7th game in a row. They're at the Thunder tonight, national television game. The playoffs begin this weekend. How confident are you guys in this team heading into the postseason?
14 out of 10. I feel great about them.
Great.
14
out of 10.
They're playing their best basketball of the season right now. And honestly, I think that this rhythm could carry over into the playoffs and maybe keep going for a couple of rounds, where some of these other teams I feel like are going to have to ramp it up once the playoffs actually begin.
There have been a lot of times in the past, I'd say 5 or 6 years with the Rockets, where I feel like they peaked too early. And I was really concerned about it this year just because as a team they weren't peaking, but James Harden, you could have argued, was, wow, it looks a lot like peaking when you're going 30 points after 30 point after 30 point game. So I was nervous that somehow they'd be a little too beaten up and that James Harden specifically would be tired. It's been the exact opposite. I feel like they're completely and totally rounding into form, and I'm kind of happy that the Bucks figured out something defensively against Harden early in the year as they did, early enough that they've had time to make adjustments. And that come playoffs, Harden has seen everything. Like, he's seen everything that everybody's going to try versus him. For the most part, it's just going to be some variation or some tweaking of it. And I feel my confidence level, I would say 8 out of 10. I still don't.
I'm going with
And then 9 and the 10 are all the Golden State Warriors.
Okay, so Paul says 14 out of 10. Seth says 8. I'm going to go with 7 out of 10. What I'm a little bit worried about is this team's not as good as last year, in my opinion. And I also think that they have to figure out the rotation, which I don't think they can really figure out until you see these guys in games. And I'm talking about the Greens, yeah, the Rivers, the Shumpers of the world. If they're playing good defense, hitting shots.
I guess, would you say, though, and I know you're going to say small sample size, but since the All-Star break, are they a better defensive team than what you saw for most of last year?
I mean, they have been statistically. I got to go back.
And especially versus good teams.
Yes,
that's been the notable part of the defense since the All-Star break. It's not just overall how good they've been. They've been good versus good teams.
It's more just how highly I think of last year's team. I think, and this is going to sound crazy, I think last year's Rockets team may have been the best Rockets team ever of all time.
Well, it was. I mean, if you look at just by point differential and all those things, they did some really rare things. They were just rolling over teams.
They just faced a historic team, and they had a big injury. So the playoffs again begin this weekend. Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Tuesday. Time now for Trainwreck Tuesday. This is going to be a little bit different. We're going to be a little bit all over the place with funny audio from all across the sports landscape. Let's begin with Stephen A. Smith. And the backstory on it is, on Thursday night, there was a game between the Sixers and somebody else. And I think it was the Sixers and the Bucks. And people thought that when there was an altercation, a fight between Eric Bledsoe and Joel Embiid, that Stephen A. Smith ran onto the court to break up the fight. Because somebody who looked very much like Stephen A. Smith went out to try to break up the fight. It was not Stephen A. Smith.
Look, it wasn't me, okay? It wasn't me. I did not storm the court at the Wells Fargo Center. Yes, you might have seen a photo of Allen Iverson and I giving me a hug, but me, I'm going to get in between that pit bull that is Eric Bledsoe and that monster, that seven-footer that is Joel Embiid. Do I look that stupid? Hell no. It wasn't me. Wake up, people. Get your eyes checked. I appreciate the person that tried to stop the fight, but damn it, it wasn't me. I got to go to work. Peace.
One of my friends texted me about this and was convinced it was Stephen A. Smith. I'm looking at it, I'm like, this would be hilarious if it actually was Stephen A. Smith, but I don't think that
actually is. Was it actually a coach? It must have been a coach, right? Because the guy was wearing a suit.
He was wearing a suit, so I would think it was
very
a coach.
Very few people at NBA games wearing suits that aren't either broadcasters, executives, or coaches. So I'm guessing it was a coach.
Yes. Let me do this. If I walked in one morning and I told you guys, hey, there was a fight at an NBA game and Stephen A. Smith ran out to the court to break it up, would you believe that story?
Oh, yeah, totally, 100%.
Paul, would you believe that?
I would not believe it, no.
Okay. Oh, I would. I would
100%. Probably would.
No, that would be a chance for Stephen A. Smith to insert himself into the story.
Yes.
He loves that.
I think Stephen A. Smith would rather talk about the story than break the story up.
I don't doubt, no, because remember we had this debate about Stephen A. Smith fighting an athlete. And didn't an athlete challenge Stephen A. Smith to a fight? Or was
Kevin Durant? Or Kevin Durant threatened him.
Somebody actually put odds
actually,
on
no, no,
it.
Actually,
no.
Stephen A. Smith threatened Kevin Durant. That's what happened.
No, it was a veiled threat. It was like, yeah, don't go messing with me or starting things you can't start. I don't know what it was. Somebody help me out on the text line. 713-572-4610. I could have sworn that there, oh, no. It was, David Carr. Remember David Carr, or no, excuse me, Derek Carr.
Derek Carr
oh, yes. challenged yes. him to a boxing
that's
match.
That's right, that's right.
And
that's
there
right.
were odds on that, and Stephen A. Smith had absurdly favorable odds versus
he's tall.
Derek Carr.
He's a big guy.
Oh, because he's tall.
He's got a lot
yeah,
of
I can't
reach.
Imagine. I can't imagine. The, what about those two would have had a bunch of people saying, like, oh, Stephen A. Smith will win that fight? Bunch of racist bastards.
Train wreck
Stephen
Tuesday.
Stephen A. Smith is old.
Derek Carver's eyeliner.
Train wreck Tuesday.
Or at least appears to.
Does Charles Barkley talk about Auburn too much personally during these broadcasts on CBS?
Spurs with two or three threes in a row, we can get some distance. But if we don't make threes, and the way Virginia plays, walking it, it's going to be a one-possession game, whoever gets it last.
Yeah. And if you're just joining us and you keep hearing the word we, that would mean Auburn because of Chuck and his allegiance
and
to the Auburn
thing,
Tigers.
Chuck, you know,
there's nothing sports broadcasters hate more than when somebody in their hallowed profession refers to a team as we. Because, no, we're real journalists here. By the way, I'm endorsing Right Guard. But we're real journalists here. We don't refer to the team as we. Hey, look. Analyzing Charles Barkley and what he does on a broadcast is like trying to say, hey, Bill Belichick should or shouldn't be doing something. Only Bill Belichick can do certain Bill Belichick things, and only Charles Barkley can do certain Charles Barkley
things. Did you see the shrine that was on his desk as he was at this Final Four?
It was a lot.
There was so much. Of course he's going to say we. I wouldn't have it any other way. In that spot.
Was he getting criticism for that, or was just...
They're busting his chops.
Not
just really.
Fun? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think anybody took it too seriously. And I give Barkley a lot of credit. You know, he was really diplomatic after the way Auburn lost on Saturday. He said, listen, the officials missed a double dribble, but he said it was the right call, the foul against Kyle Guy.
He wasn't being diplomatic. He was telling the truth.
Well, yeah, but you know how people can be. They can be very angry when it's their team.
No. I don't know what you're saying, but like just being honest and telling the truth as well, always, like, that's
well,
not necessarily the diplomatic thing.
He could have said the wrong team won, they should have called the double dribble,
don't
and
you,
in fact, he would have been right.
Calling Charles Barkley diplomatic is an insult to Charles Barkley. That would be like almost that he's like tempering his emotions or something. He was giving his true emotion, which is like, you know what, that was the correct call.
I was trying to find a better word.
We're fine.
Trainwreck Tuesday, the GM of the Milwaukee Bucks is a guy named John Horse. He was on First Things First on Fox Sports 1. And he laid out the case for why Giannis is the clear MVP.
Now make the case for Giannis being this year's MVP.
Yeah, to me, it's really clear. So most valuable player to a team. We've got the best team. We've beaten Houston twice. We've got the best team in the East, the best team in the league right now, record-wise. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. But Giannis, offensively and defensively, is dominating this league. He's averaging 26 and 13, like we just said. He's also the only guy that's averaging over a block and a steal a game to add on to those stats. And so offensively, he has a significant impact on our team, and defensively, he dominates the league as well.
All things considered, I think it's a pretty good argument by this John Horse fellow.
I'm going to dock him points for redundancy. But other than that, it's a good argument. And a lot of this just comes down to what are your criteria for the MVP?
Yes.
And there are a lot of people that have always said, hey, it's got to be somebody that's on a really, really good team. That's where the Rockets' argument for James Harden has changed over the course of the season. Because when Harden was awesome, but the Rockets were a 5 or a 6 seed, it was a lot easier to say, well, Antetokounmpo's on the best team. Now that the Rockets are potentially a 3 seed, and as of the last 25, 30 games, have been a way more dominant team than they were before, I feel like that puts Harden back up into that category of, hey, look at what he's doing for a really good basketball team.
And the problem for Harden is that Milwaukee has clearly been the best team in the league.
The head-to-head matchups,
That actually doesn't really bother me at all.
I know it doesn't because for it's me. Basketball and it doesn't matter as much, but when it's a tiebreaker, I feel like it should. But now, Antetokounmpo hasn't had brilliant games in those, though.
Yeah,
that's
good.
If he had brilliant games, that would be another story.
One more on Trainwreck Tuesday. This is one of Seth Payne's favorite television programs, Very Cavallari, and Jay Cutler got drunk and has a funny nickname.
It's been a long day. I mean, we've all been drinking all day long, and it's very clear that Les Mis is here at this party. I never invite Les Mis anywhere, but sometimes he just comes.
Oh, my God.
Welcome back, Les Mis.
His name is Les Mis.
Terrible.
He's a miserable drunk, so they call him Les Mis when he's drunk.
Oh, okay.
So apparently he drank a lot at this event that his wife held with a bunch of childhood friends. They were sleeping over, and he was not having a good time. So he's drinking, and he's basically just wandering around being completely mute.
That's probably the least shocking thing I've ever heard in my entire life, that Jay Cutler is a miserable drunk. There are a lot of things about this show that are shocking, like when Jay Cutler is showing some humanity at times, being nice to his wife and kids, or when he's actually really, really funny. But him being a grumpy drunk that's pretty much exactly what you'd expect, right?
I actually would have expected him to be a cheery drunk.
Cutler?
Yes.
Why?
Because he's such a dour personality when he's sober.
Yeah.
That I expect him to change a little bit and perk up when he's drunk.
Alcohol kind of makes you more of what you are, doesn't
but
it?
But
a lot of grumpy people turn kind of goofy when they're,
When I drink, I am more outgoing.
You know who's kind of a fun drinker? Tom Coughlin.
Oh, yeah?
He doesn't get drunk, but he has a couple drinks, and all of a sudden he's like chirpy Tom Coughlin.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun, yeah.
Good for you, Tom.
Like, this is a different side of you.
All right. I like that story.
I'm going to get him drunk before I die. I'm going to get him, Dom Capers, and Gary Kubiak all together.